This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You get into this conversation about, yes, you have desalination as one piece, but also there are these other things that you could be doing that sort of everyone can probably get behind.
Just watching clips from the latest Mad Max during the Oscars made me thirsty. Whether our future will be quite that apocalyptic is unknown, but we do know that climate change will have a severe impact on the availability of water. Where to turn for some hope? How about toward those miles and miles of deep blue that surround us? Transforming ocean water into potable drinking water seems so remarkably cool on so many levels. But alas, desalination remains both expensive and energy intensive. Up to this point, it's only been tried in relatively wealthy, arid nations like Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Australia. But with the serious threat that the ongoing drought poses to the nation's breadbasket, it's possible that desalination technology could soon be arriving on the golden shores of California. This week on Sea Change Radio, I speak with energy reporter from the Palm Springs Desert Sun, Sammy Roth. Roth recently researched a piece about efforts to make desalination more commonplace in California. Listen and discover whether Californians will be drinking the Pacific shortly, or if desalination is too impractical a solution in locations that are only on their way to desertification and not yet as parched as Fury Road. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Sammy Roth. Sammy's a reporter for the Desert Sun, based out of Palm Springs, California. Sammy, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Good to talk to you, Alex.
So you recently wrote a piece on desalination efforts in California. Is this something that you see is going to be happening anytime soon?
That's a good question. I think that the consensus that I sort of found when I was working on my article is that probably at some point in the future, not sure how soon that will be, but at some point there will be more desalination in California than there is now. That definitely there seems to be a move in that direction. I think that, it becomes much trickier when you start to talk about how much desalination and how soon are we going to need it, or how soon are we going to build it. On the one hand, you have in Carlsbad in San Diego County, the largest desal plant in the Western Hemisphere just opened up. It cost $1 billion. It's going to supply water to 300,000 people. And there's a similar one proposed in Huntington Beach, and then another, 13 or 14 additional plants that are proposed in various stages up and down the coast. People look out at the ocean and they say, well, we're in this dire drought right now. We have this water supply that's already very stretched thin by population and by urban growth and by agriculture and by environmental needs. And, we're in a desert and there's climate change and these problems are probably only going to get worse. And so you have people who look out at the ocean and say, of course, we should be tapping this resource. It's, it's pretty endless. We can find the money to pay for it. We should make this a priority. On the other hand, you have a lot of pretty vocal critics of desalination who point out that one, it's very, very expensive, much more expensive than sort of other methods of stretching the water supply that are less controversial, things like water recycling and stormwater capture and just sort of plain old efficiency and conservation, like we've seen California do a lot of over the last year. It's also very energy intensive, and when you use energy frequently, that means burning greenhouse gases and contributing to climate change. You've also got potential impacts on marine life, both when you suck the water out from the ocean and when you sort of put the salty residue back in the ocean. There's a potential there, depending on how it's done, to impact larvae and sort of very, very young fish. So there are all of these questions that surround it and that make it sort of a more difficult answer than, you know, yes, there's going to be more desalination, or no, there isn't going to be any. You know, I think almost everyone will tell you that there's a role for it to play, even if it's a small role and even if it's not right away. But because of all of these issues, it's just very tricky to say how much of it is going to happen and, you know, when it's going to happen.
But it sounds like this project in Carlsbad is happening. Is that fair to say?
That's right. So the Carlsbad desalination plant, biggest one in the Western Hemisphere, it opened in November, or maybe they had the official opening in December, and it's, you know, it produces 50 million gallons of water per day, or it's capable of doing that. It cost $1 billion to build. They said in San Diego County that they expected, you know, monthly water bills on average to go up by $5 or $7 a month. But you know, it's happening, and it's there, and it's operating, and I think as far as I've heard, it seems to be working as advertised. And so I know, I think that people are really going to be watching that plant, and you know, if people in San Diego like what they're getting and it's what they expected, you know, that would be something that would lend itself to arguments in favor of future desalination plants.
So that $1 billion price tag, is that just the startup costs, or is that also running it afterwards?
Yeah, I don't know what the expense of running it's going to be. I know that what they said was that the water bills for, you know, customers in San Diego County who are going to be paying for this, we're going to go up by something like $5 to $7 per month. And San Diego County Water Authority has agreed, the sort of way that they were able to, you know, get a company to spend all of this money up front is that they've agreed to buy this water for 30 years, you know, at a constant rate, or not at a constant rate. It's tied to whatever else the price of water is elsewhere, but basically they've agreed to buy this water for 30 years, sort of no matter what the water situation is otherwise in the state. So those are some of the things that I think, you know, helped give the developer Poseidon Resources the certainty to build.
Just when I read that number, besides the questions that it arose in whether or not this is a long-term cost versus a short-term outlay of capital, it also made me try to understand better how much water costs in context. Could you maybe give us a better idea of how much it costs to deliver water to 300,000 people without using desalination methods?
Good question. The numbers that I remember from the story that I worked on, and this was for Santa Barbara, San Diego, I'd honestly have to go and look it up. But what they told me in Santa Barbara was that they were paying, for the desalinated water, they were paying between $1,300 and $15 per acre foot, and an acre foot is the amount of water that it would take to cover an acre of land and 1 foot of water. It's sort of one of these wonky water units. So they were looking at 1,300 to 1,500 acre feet, and that was more expensive than every other type of water. They were paying, I want to say, $800 or something significantly less per acre foot to get water delivered to them from Northern California through the State Water Project. Even recycled water, which is, you know, relatively expensive still, they were paying, I think, $1,200 per acre foot, which is less. And, you know, for water that came from their local, you know, their Lake Kachuma, their reservoir near Santa Barbara, I think it was about $300 per acre foot. So it's, you know, it's definitely a bigger expense. One of the arguments that's been made, you know, in favor of spending that money is that, you know, when you look at these other water supplies, they're becoming less reliable, especially now in a drought. The State Water Project isn't always delivering, or is very rarely delivering, even a fraction of what people have been promised. The Colorado River is drying up. So a lot of people see desalination, even though it's significantly more expensive in some cases, as a little bit of a hedge against what's happening with the price of water elsewhere. And now that I, you know, say all that, I think I remember that in San Diego, they were actually going to be paying on the order of $2,000 per acre foot for the water. And so I couldn't translate that out to 300,000 people, but that was sort of the sort of per unit price.
And this whole technology in non-desert places seems to be a hedge, as you said, and it's tricky for municipalities to find that balance between a dire need and just being prudent and planning for the future. Why don't you talk about some of the experience that Australia has had with desalination?
Yeah, so I mean, Australia was one of the, one of the things I looked at in my article. And basically, in Australia, they had this drought called the Millennium Drought that, oh God, it lasted a very, very long time. I think it was about 15 years in the early or mid 90s that this drought really got underway, and it was still going into the late 2000s. And so they said, we really need to do something serious. And so they built these six desalination plants, enormous, massive. I think several of them, if not all of them, might have been bigger than the one in Carlsbad. And they spent a lot of money on that, several billion dollars, I believe. And they opened these plants, and then sort of the moment that they started producing water, the drought ended after all of that time. And since then, four of the six plants have just not operated at all, because they didn't need them, and because the water was so expensive to produce. And it's interesting, because as best as as far as I've been told, it still is sort of a controversial issue in Australia, where you have some people who say, this was such a waste of money, we never should have done this, we should have, found other ways to stretch our water supply, or to use less. And then on the other hand, you have people. I spoke to a professor at one of the universities there for my article, who said, well, it looks bad right now, and but if you look at climate change and what is the future going to look like, I think that eventually we're going to use these, we're going to turn them back on, we're going to be glad that we have them. And that's kind of similar, honestly, to what happened in Santa Barbara, where the desal plant there, they actually built it in the early 1990s, sort of coming out of another serious drought, and they turned it on, spent $35 million to build it, which for a city the size of Santa Barbara, that was a lot of money at the time, still is now. And they turned the thing on, and then the drought ended, and they said, gee, this is expensive, we have cheaper water elsewhere, so they turned it off. And now, 25 years later, they're paying a lot of money, I think $50 or $55 million now, even more than, they paid to build the thing, just to turn it back on, and it's going to be a couple million per year to operate. And so it's a very tricky question, because I think the leadership in that city is glad that they have it, and glad they have this option, and they think it's going to make sense long term. But they did have this experience where they thought that once before, and they kind of regretted it, at least for a while.
And with this Carlsbad project, would it only be able to deliver water to the local 300,000 people that we're talking about, or is it possible to be able to ship that water to places deeper in the desert of California, where drought is much more of a constant?
That's an interesting question. With Carlsbad in particular, I'm not sure. I mean, it was built specifically for San Diego County, and that's where they're distributing the water. I think what's interesting, though, is that one of the things I learned while reporting on this is that Las Vegas, which, as anyone, everyone probably knows, is nowhere near an ocean, considers desalination sort of an important part of its long-term water supply picture. And what they believe in Las Vegas is that at a certain point, they're going to have to work with California, or work with Mexico, or some combination of thereof, to make some sort of arrangement where desal plants, or a desal plant, or multiple, are sort of being built on the coast to supply people on the coast. And then in exchange, if Las Vegas pays for that, they think they'll hopefully be able to trade some of that water for water that California or Mexico has a right to from the Colorado River, which is much more proximal to them. I don't know that that's something that can be applied, everywhere up and down the state, or in other places where you always have those situations where that kind of trading can be done, but definitely something that Las Vegas is interested in long term.
She said, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm making out fine." And then she said, "How'd you like to stop on round and see me? Come on over for a drink sometime, baby. Listen, I'd rather drink salty water, salty water, yeah, child, then you'll find this wine." But you see, now I used to take the water from my baby's well, so I found all the other jokers. Hey, I've been drinking the fields. Well, I said, now I'd rather drink salt water.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Desert Sun reporter Sammy Roth. So Sammy, we talked about how the two biggest barriers for desalination's expansion are cost and energy consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's turn to the energy consumption side a little bit more and focus on that. And also if you can maybe mention how wastewater recycling could be an element of trying to be more prudent with water as well.
Sure. So the energy-water nexus is really interesting, and you can see it in desalination. The number that I remember is that for the San Diego plant, which again is going to supply water for about 300,000 people, or I should say already is supplying water because it opened a few months ago, it takes the equivalent of about a 31-megawatt power plant operating around the clock to keep that process humming, to push the water through the reverse osmosis filters to take the salt out of it. That's something, that would supply something like, 40,000 people with, or homes with energy for a year in California. So that's not insignificant. When you're looking at any individual desalination plant, the impacts of that in terms of, burning fossil fuels and releasing greenhouse gases is not going to be huge. It's just one facility. But when you look, say there are 15 desal plants or so proposed in California, and when you start to add that up, then you could be getting towards a little bit of a more significant chunk. And the number that gets thrown around a lot is that the State Water Project, which is the sort of backbone of California's water infrastructure, it's the system of pumps and aqueducts that carries water from the north, where it's generally wetter, to the south, where it's very dry. That system alone is something like 2 to 3% of California's energy consumption on an annual basis. And so you do have experts who have looked at this who say, if California really wanted to sort of go all out on desalination and make that a big priority, you could start to be getting into some pretty significant energy use. Of course, it's more complicated than that, because then it's a question of where is that energy coming from. Right now, California's energy supply is about 75% fossil fuels and about 25% renewables. That's going to change over time. There's a mandate in place that 50% of the state's electricity is going to need to come from renewables by 2030. So that sort of gets you to a better balance. But, whenever you use energy, you're still in a situation, at least for the foreseeable future, where, a lot of that's going to be coming from these polluting sources. And so, anything that people talk about that's, here's a new use of energy that's very intensive, that's going to raise some concerns. So the other big thing that comes into play when in this desalination conversation is, the critics of desalination, their argument tends to be that, there's this untapped source, the Pacific Ocean, but we have a bunch of cheaper and more environmentally friendly ways to stretch our water supply. And, the things that people generally point to, wastewater recycling is a big one. California right now, wastewater, you talk about water that's used in, showers and toilets and sort of different household uses that, goes back into the sewer system and is sometimes flushed to the ocean and sometimes, recycled and used for other things. Right now, I think the percentage is only 10 or 15% or maybe 20% of that is actually recycled and put to other uses. And again, that's an issue where there's money involved. You have to pay to put the infrastructure in place to recycle and reuse that. Not as expensive as desalination, but it's still a struggle for a lot of places. There have been controversies in the past of people who are, concerned, is the water that, went through my toilet, am I going to be drinking that now? And increasingly, it sort of seems like that's less of an issue for people, that the drought has made people understand a little bit that, we need to be doing some of these, these very safe things to reuse our water supply. So wastewater recycling is one component of it. Stormwater capture is another that, there's not a lot of infrastructure in place in California to really, especially in Southern California, where we don't have as many reservoirs as they do in the north. There could be a lot more that's to be done to, capture the water when it does fall from the sky and not let it sort of all run off into the sewers or into the ocean. And then just, you know, conservation and efficiency are sort of the obvious ones. You know, everyone has seen in the last year that Californians in cities have managed to, you know, reduce their water use by 25% in response to the mandate from Governor Jerry Brown. And I think there's, you know, that's made people optimistic that some level of that can be sustained and that, you know, in future there could be more sustained savings. So, you know, it just, you get into this conversation about, yes, you have desalination as one piece, but also there are these other things that you could be doing that sort of everyone can probably get behind.
From a policymaking standpoint, it's really a challenge because it takes long-term planning, and you really are in a no-win situation. If you do build it and it saves a community 20 years from now, nobody goes back and says, oh, thanks to Mayor Smith for really pushing for this desalination plant 20 years ago. But if it rains a lot over the next decade or two, everyone is cursing Mayor Smith for wasting everybody's money. It'd be really interesting to see how these desalination plants that exist in Israel have worked and kind of the pushback on it, because we just assume it's a desert and they always need it. But the reality is they definitely have years where they have decent rainfall there.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something else that's interesting. And this was not in the article that I wrote because it's much more recent. And I, you know, I haven't covered this, but I've been reading about it in papers like the San Diego Union Tribune. You know, they're already having this debate where, you know, their desal plant opened in, I think it was November or December. But, you know, they, because of the conservation that's been going on, you know, everyone's been saving so much water in the last year, and they suddenly have this new supply, they've actually been put in a situation where, at the moment, temporarily, they have more water than they know what to do with, because they're under contract to, you know, continue to buy this desalinated water sort of no matter what. So they have actually had to take some of this, you know, very expensive desalinated water along with recycled wastewater that they've, you know, paid to treat, and sort of just dump it into reservoirs rather than use it, because there hasn't been a use for it. And the result of that is that when they want to take it out of the reservoir and use it for something, they're going to have to pay to clean it again. And so that's created a little bit of a stir down there, where they're already, you know, even in the drought, in the situation of people saying, you know, see, we told you so, we told you were signing this sort of boondoggle agreement. And you know, that's one side of the story. The water managers in San Diego County, they're still very confident. They think this is a good long-term investment, and that, you know, when you look back, and as you said, in 20 or 30 years, if you're paying attention, you're going to say, gee, well, it's good that we, you know, it's good that we had that. We're much less dependent on imported water now. We have this hedge against prices. We have a supply we can rely upon. But at least in the immediate short term, it's already sort of created this controversy.
When the high tide's rising, mama, don't you let me down. Pack up your suitcase, mama, don't you make a sound. Well, it's sugar for sugar and it's salt for salt. If you go down in the flood, it's gonna be your fault. Oh, mama, ain't you gonna miss your best friend now? You're gonna have to find yourself another best friend somehow.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Desert Sun reporter Sammy Roth. You quote in the article someone from the Pacific Institute, I believe it's Heather Cooley.
Yeah.
We've had Peter Glick from the Pacific Institute on several times here on Sea Change Radio to talk about water conservation and the drought. What was their stance in terms of desalination?
Well, I think the Pacific Institute's take, if I could summarize it, is that, you know, they think there's potentially a, you know, potentially a small role for desalination in the future. They don't seem very bullish on it in the short term. You know, they're definitely coming from a place of sort of as I was describing before, you know, look at these, you know, look at these other cheaper and sort of more environmentally friendly things that we could do to, you know, make sure we have enough water in California. I think they're definitely, you know, the people there are at the point of saying like, well, you know, maybe this is something that's going to be, that we're going to need more of eventually, but, you know, we really want to be careful about expanding too quickly in this direction right now because we might not need it yet.
And then the issue that kind of hangs over a lot of the state's outlays for water is the Delta Tunnels project, which sounds like a Sisyphean task and a very expensive one at best. We won't even dive into that now, but it's worth keeping in mind when we're talking about California and water.
It is. The tunnels are this impossible sort of question that we've been debating in California for something like 30 years now. And, you know, I think like desalination, it's just, you know, it's one of those issues where people on both sides have very strong opinions and very much believe that they are in the right. And no one really knows how they're going to play out.
Sammy Roth from the Desert Sun, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
You're welcome, Alex. Good talking to you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Miles Davis, John Cleary, and Bob Dylan. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.